Hello, hockey fans. It is Tuesday, April 10th, and thank you for joining us for another edition of From the Press Box right here at the AHL Report. I'm your host, Amy Johnson, the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report, covering the Laval Rocket, amongst other things as well. And I'm so happy that you're here today. And of course, I'm happy to be joined, as I am every week, by my fabulous co-host, the founder of Rocket Sports Media and the editor-in-chief of all of our brands, Mr. Rick Stevens. Welcome.
I am thrilled to be here on National Farm Animals Day, and I'm going to stop this one.
Because yesterday,
okay, this is the last one. This is absolutely the last one.
Until you all heard this. He says it's the last one. Because I have a mute button, so next week, if he doesn't uphold this promise, the mute button's going.
But listen, yesterday, had we had the podcast yesterday was not only the tire fire that was the Montreal Canadiens' end-of-season presser with Marc Bergevin and Jeff Molson. It was National Winston Churchill Day, one of the greatest human beings who's ever walked the earth, and someone who whose quotes I tend to, live my life on. So I just thought I would mention that as one of the last times that I'm ever allowed to say National Day.
Not one of the last times. You can't rephrase now, because all of my friends, our listeners, just heard you say 30 seconds ago, this is the last time.
If you love this segment, tweet in that you want me to continue with National Day.
Really? We'll see what happens.
So what do we got on the agenda today?
Well, you did mention that there was just this spectacular entertainment. Jeff Molson talked yesterday about how the big thing for next season is an increase in fan entertainment. And let me tell you, how entertaining was yesterday's press conference? I mean, he really kicked off that initiative in true fashion, really. Just got done listening to Marc Bergevin's radio interview with Mitch Melnick on TSN 690, who, bravo, finally somebody took it to Marc Bergevin. And oh my goodness, it's just been such a week already in Habs land. And I'm sure I would recommend that everyone tune in to Habs 360 later this week on Saturday, because I guarantee that Rick and Chris G are going to have some words about the things that have been said this week from the Habs owner and GM, some of the things that the players said as well. But some of it we're gonna incorporate into our day as well here a little bit. I'm sure we'll have some tidbits here and there. And so while we're all fired up talking about the Habs, we're also going to talk about the Rocket, which I would like to know how, as we see on a regular basis, no one in the Habs press room really presses anyone that they interview in terms of coaching and management. And I find it stunning that, yes, there's a week left in the AHL's regular season, but I find it stunning that no one in that room yesterday had the wherewithal to ask Jeff Molson and or Marc Bergevin about the inaugural season of their fancy new AHL franchise just 20 minutes outside the city of Montreal. And the fact that they've had an equally horrible and disappointing season, and what the owner and GM of the Habs think about that. And think about, hey, is it, Mark, is it an attitude problem in Laval as well? Is that what it is? It's an attitude problem there? Or perhaps it's systemic. Maybe, just maybe, it's systemic, since it's happening at every level. I mean, Brampton doesn't have to follow necessarily the NHL club's system, but Brampton didn't have a bright, shining season either. And I'm just amazed that there wasn't a single journalist, and I'll use that, I'm feeling extra snarky today, so I'll use that term lightly, loosely, that there wasn't one journalist in there that didn't have the ability to wrap their head around the bigger picture of an organizational-wide issue that's going on. I didn't mean to get started on a soapbox. I was really just going to go down the agenda for the day. But if I had been in that room, I would have asked about the Laval Rocket, because I'd like to know what Jeff Molson thinks about this relative, at least for your on-ice product, relative flop of your opening season. You can't blame it on injuries and call-ups, because that's what every single American League team deals with. So, Rick, we'll probably start with the Laval Rocket. And feel free, feel free to chime in if you want on that. I was disappointed and just surprisingly not, I was not surprised, but I was at the same time. I mean, apparently Jeff Molson thought that it was more important to talk about how your beer prices aren't going to go up next year. That's going to be the answer to everything.
Oh, I don't think he included beer in the, I think they'll go up. He just, you know, you don't have to, their main, he wasn't planning, I think that's the phrase he used, he wasn't planning on a season ticket increase. And the best news is that you won't have to pay extra for printed tickets, as if that was, something that they shouldn't have done in the first place, was somehow a big win for the fans.
Yeah.
Listen, that the whole thing yesterday, it would have been much better to just go out and deliver a simple statement rather than to have engaged in this farcical theater that they did, and then to pretend that this was a new age of transparency was utterly offensive, and to base the whole to blame the whole season on attitude and on communications was just plain silly. The attitude business, for 6 years in every transaction and after every acquisition, Mark Bergevin has gone before the microphone and said, this guy's got character. I'm bringing in character. And for him to then say, oh, we have I've spent the entire of my tenure with the Montreal Canadiens bringing in and character, and understand there's only three guys on the team that Mark Bergevin didn't acquire, Price, Gallagher, and Pacioretty, to point and say it's all about attitude now is a stunning indictment of his own tenure. He laid the best case yesterday for why he should be fired, and then Molson said, yeah, but he's my guy, he's the best one to guide us through this, out of this hole. And it was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. And as you said, it's an organizational issue. It applies to the Laval Rocket as well. Expect that there's going to be scapegoats. I won't say right now, but I have, my article, I guess, that was out today on All Habs, said who I think is going to, be under the knife here, but we'll save that, and there's going to be scapegoats, but they aren't the ones who deserve to be shown the door. Bergevin does, Julien does, obviously, and maybe even Molson needs to step back from the way he has with the team.
Well, you know, it's funny you say, you mentioned that, you know, according to Mark Bergevin and Jeff Molson yesterday, it was attitude and communications that were the issue this season. But you forgot one very big piece of the puzzle that was apparently the reason why, as they kept saying yesterday, why we're here today. That was Carey Price. Because didn't you know, it's Carey Price's job for the entire team to perform well. threw him directly under the bus, which Mark Bergevin in a radio interview just told Mitch Melnick, we don't want to throw anyone under the bus. And he did exactly that yesterday with Carey Price. And I bring this up because this isn't a Habs podcast, so I'm not going to get on my rant and tangent about the treatment of Carey Price and how the season's failure at the NHL level is not due to goaltending. However, I will talk about treatment of players, because that extends down to the guys that we cover in the AHL for the Laval Rocket. And, you know, you have a season that ends the way that it did at the NHL and the AHL level when their season is done at the end of this weekend. And you're going to pin all of that on Carey Price, your franchise goaltender. The guy who just set the franchise record for games played. The guy who's kind of like your beacon of hope and overcomes adversity and injuries and battles every time you go out there. That's who you're going to say, Carey didn't have a good season. If he has a good season next year and everyone in the room has a good attitude and we have better communications, then we'll win the Stanley Cup. It's just ridiculous. And how do you expect to have a good attitude from a team when you do things like that, like calling out players? And you see it happen quite often, this team, when it comes to their prospects. And just the way that they handle their prospects. In the past, we've had issues with the way Jacob Delarose was handled. Even at points during this season, until Thomas Plekanec was traded and they actually gave him Delarose the responsibilities they should have been giving him, they were on his back and the media was on his back, which meant the fans were on his back. It happens with prospects all the time. Sherbak is another shining example. Sherbak was a bust for the last couple of years, if you ask anyone in the media or the fans, until he got called up. Yes, he had some maturing to do. Yes, he had some growth to do in transitioning to the NHL and staying healthy. But it's also about being put in a position to succeed. And it's all about, you know, the attitude in the room is going to come from the confidence and the attitude that the players feel that they are surrounded by with their coaching staff and their management staff. So, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, roster changes for the Rocket for this week in a little bit, but I will point out something that occurred on Sunday that makes zero sense to me from a player development standpoint. Why on God's earth does Brett Lernout, Michael McCarron, and Kirby Reichel need to come back down to the Laval Rocket to play two essentially meaningless games against the Toronto Marlies this weekend to finish out the season? The day before post-mortem and media day, which tells them, okay, we've seen enough of you or whatever, and go ahead and go back down to the AHL. To me, it's kind of a slap in the face, like a reminder, like, yes, you're not part of the NHL team. We're going to send you back to your minor league team now. And at the end of a season for both clubs who are not making the playoffs, what's the point? Maybe the point is that, okay, we'd really like to try to get Laval in the win column at least once this weekend for these two games. Maybe that's the point. And if it is, okay. I hope you explained that to them if that was the case. I don't know how you feel about it, Rick. I just feel like it just... time and again, the handling of players and their development and building confidence, stripping away confidence. I was shocked on Sunday when the press announcement came out that they were returned to Laval. I would have assumed that their season would have just been done. I don't know.
I don't know what the reason is that they were sent back. But I do know one thing, and that is that it has absolutely nothing to do with their best interests or their development. Nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing whatsoever. Maybe it's to sell tickets for the last Laval home game. maybe it's to, as you said, offer a chance to go out with a win, as Toronto is icing a depleted lineup as they rest players. We don't know, but we do know that, you know, these players aren't going to be well served by having to go through the motions of and get themselves up for playing and being in these games. Is it also saying that all those ATOs we signed and we didn't do a real good job there because we've seen enough. They're coming out of the lineup to make room for our three players coming down from the Canadians. Like I said, we don't know, but it's obvious that what should be foremost in their minds is the development welfare of the players, and the Montreal Canadiens have shown time and time again this season and others that that's not how they think, and I think that's kind of when you look at why these players don't make the transition very successfully to the NHL. There's good drafting, there's good development down in Laval, and then it gets to the NHL level, and that transition, that last point where they step in and take over and become a contributor at the NHL level is stymied purposefully by the organization. Again, at the end of the season, there's going to be scapegoats, but one of them, Marc Bergevin has said Claude Julien is safe. We saw many times this season where the Logan Shaws and the Byron Frazes and his pet projects, his same as Martinson and King and Ott and all those guys that he prefers, take precedence in roster spots over the young players, which in a tough season when there was nothing on the line, they could have been given more minutes, been given more responsibility, been given more experience to carry over to next season.
Absolutely. And as you say, now these three players who spent, granted, Kirby Reichel has only been up for about a week and a half, but the other two were up significantly longer than that. So would it be too much to ask, would it be that hard to take these three players and give them the confidence of letting them feel good about the way they finished the season, letting them feel good about their game, letting them feel good about the fact that they ended their season in the NHL, went through postmortem and exit interviews with the GM and the head coach and things of that nature, and had a clear path on and direction on what they needed to do over the summer to have a good training camp in the fall, if given new contracts and things of that nature, because of course we've got all of that fun entertainment to go through this summer. Where instead, now they're put in a position, you go down to the AHL and help them win, or whatever the excuse is, whatever the reason is. And as you say, how do they get up for these games? Now they're put in a position where anyone that comes back down from the NHL says that it takes a game or two to readjust to just the way the game is played in the AHL. It's a different kind of game. And also just then being put in a place where, I have to show them that I have a good attitude. I have to show them that I'm happy to come down and do my due diligence and do my duty. And it just doesn't seem right to me. Speaking of signing new rot, kind of thing. I am never pleased to hear about a player injury, of course, but I am almost relieved for Jake Evans that he has some sort of minor injury that the Canadiens doctors want to take a look at, which means he will not play. Jake Evans, for those of you who did not see the announcement, was signed to a 2-year entry-level contract by the Canadiens on Monday. for 2018-19 and 2019-20. So it means because of this injury, he will not play in Laval this coming weekend. And Rick, it's, you know, if he had played in those two games, he would have burned, would that have burned a year on his ELC?
Would have burned a year. It's a 2-year contract that he signed. Would have burned a year for the two games. And for the life of me, I don't see the value in that. You know, if it would be, again, it would be different if he was going to help a playoff
yeah.
run or something. I don't understand why it was even a consideration and why it took the minor injury to, or presumably that's the excuse they're giving, that it's his injury that's preventing him from any further play this season. But I guess these are the kinds of things in this new announced era of transparency by the Montreal Canadiens that they're going to explain. You know what was disturbing more than anything was that and he used the Jeff Molson used the example of recalls and being sent down that he sits by the radio and listens to some of the call-in shows, the talk radio, the sports radio shows, and wishes that he could call in and provide the answer, which I think is a pretty strange way. A pretty strange way for a president of hockey operations and an owner to act. But it also underscores, I think, that public perception sometimes drives decisions. My goodness, that might explain a lot of the bad decisions that have been made in the past. But on this one, on the Jake Evans one, at least he'll have a, and let's, you know, I hate doing this because, and it happens all the time, happened with Ryan Poehling this year, that we see these guys before they're known. We see these guys play and we talk them up. We introduce them to our listeners, to our readers. And we talk about their talents and what they can do. And then it becomes a runaway train. And all of a sudden, had Jake Evans been available, had they been knocked out of the regionals, people were talking about Jake Evans joining the Canadiens and there's our first line center and there's after all of this, Twitter got nuts. After all of this, you know, you're trying to talk about the good things about a particular player, then you have to pump the brakes hard. And Jake Evans was a seventh round pick. He's not the answer for anything for the Canadiens. He's going to play for the Laval Rocket next year and contribute, and maybe someday he's going to be a fourth, maybe third line contributor. But there's a reason that Jake Evans was a seventh round pick. And I'm not being critical. He was amazing in the Frozen Four, both the regionals and the Frozen Four. That where he outmuscled Quinn Hughes in the Michigan game. For Notre Dame to get to the final, 5 seconds left, and Notre Dame scores, it was absolutely he had two goals and an assist in the semi game that carried his team into the finals. Jake Evans is a leader. He's has character. Man, does he have good attitude? I'm not sure. I think he does.
I'll be sure to ask him in the first interview with him.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a good attitude, Jake?
How's your attitude, Jake?
But he was a great pick by Trevor Timmons. and he's going to contribute. But let's temper the expectations somewhat on what exactly he can deliver at the NHL level.
We certainly, like I said, I never like to see a player injured, but in this instance, and we don't know, even if he didn't have the injury, whether or not the plan was to have him play these two games in Laval, but I'm happy to know that he won't be. In my opinion, it wouldn't be worthwhile to burn a year of his 2-year contract on two games against Toronto to end a disappointing season. So since we're kind of going backwards on our Rocket Report agenda, I'll kind of segue that to say, yes, so there are two more games left for the Laval Rocket. And frankly, there's not a lot to talk about in terms of the three games that they played last week. They lost all three of them. Their game against Belleville was actually probably their best of the three. They lost that one in a shootout in the fifth round of the shootout. It was probably the best game that they had played in a while. It kind of looked like a full 60 minutes. It was, they played well. But it comes down to the fact that they are still struggling. They're still not winning. The last time I checked, they were 0-8-1-1 or 0-7-1-2, something like that, in their last 10 games played. And if we go back farther than that, it's been a while since they had a win. And so they've got two games left. There are two games left on the season, and it's not going to be an easy two games. Yes, they're playing the Toronto Marlies Friday night and Saturday. So the Marlies are a tough team, but the Marlies are also going to the playoffs, so they are probably going to be resting players. And believe it or not, the Marlies end their season with a 3-3, because the Marlies also play at home on Sunday afternoon as well. But it's a tough two-game turnaround for the AHL scheduling with this. I really don't quite understand. They play Friday and Saturday. It's a home and home. They start on Friday night. Toronto comes to Laval. They play in Laval. It's a later start, a 7:30 start. And then both teams are going to have to get on their bus at, 11 o'clock at night and drive the 5 hours to Toronto. So they're going to get in super late. You know, you're talking wee hours of the morning getting into Toronto. And the game, puck drop at Rico Coliseum on Saturday, is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's going to be a rough turnaround for a back-to-back. So this team's going to need to find the will to win and some determination. It's not going to be an easy weekend for Toronto either, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. I am happy to report that myself and Rick will be meeting up in Toronto, and we will be bringing live coverage of that final game of the Laval Rockets season from Rico Coliseum on Saturday afternoon. So be sure to follow along for live game updates. And of course, we will be doing a plethora of player interviews after the game, since it is their last game of the season. So stay tuned for all of that from the AHL report for sure. The one bright spot, Rick, that really, before we move on from the Rocket, the one bright spot in this past week was, goaltending was not the issue again in these three losses this week. And Charlie Lindgren looked really good in that shootout game against Belleville on Saturday. But the one bright spot that continues to come up is Chris Terry. Chris Terry, on his birthday on Saturday, scored two goals. It was the only two goals that the Rockets scored on Saturday. It was his 31st and 32nd goals of the season, putting him at 70 points overall in the league, which gave him a solid 2-point lead in the standings. Since then, Lehigh Valley's Phil Veron has tied him again. So they are yet again tied for that overall points winner at 70 apiece. But Chris Terry continues to find ways to put the puck in the back of the net. and good for him. And as it was, Matt Tarmino had an assist on one of those two goals. He continues to be in contention in the top three for points for defensemen in the league. And so, you know, there are guys, Rick, some veterans who have been major point producers, not just on this team, but in the league. And I've, you know, people talk about MVPs, league MVPs for the year. It's one thing when you have, okay, so you have Phil Verone, who's doing tremendous things, putting up all of these points, but he's doing it on a team that won the Atlantic Division and has been a tremendous looking team from preseason in the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. That's to take nothing away from Phil's performance, but he's doing that with a team that's winning and winning big time. For me, for Chris Terry to put up the kind of points that he's put up this season, playing, what is it, 14 or 15 fewer games because if he was out with injury, on a team that's almost dead last in the conference, that to me, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that's MVP worthy, because that takes skill, it takes determination, it takes a good attitude, and it takes coming to work and wanting to be a team guy and do whatever you can to help your team win every day. Just my thoughts. Just my thoughts.
The Lehigh Valley Phantoms have, as a team, have scored 253 goals this season. That is tied for tops in the league, tops with the Charlotte Checkers. By contrast, by comparison, the Laval Rocket have scored 201 goals. That's 52 fewer goals. That's a lot.
That's a lot of goals.
That's a big difference. So obviously, Terry's proportion of his team's output with his 32 goals is far higher than Phil Verone. And they're different players. Phil Verone has 23 goals. Verone has more assists. They both have 70 points. But the bottom line comes down to the Laval Rocket. If you're looking for things to play for, yes, for sure, play well. Play for your contract. Play for a roster spot next year. Play so you feel good, you know, entering the off season. But if all those things don't register on your dial, play for Chris Terry to win the Sullenberger Trophy, to win the scoring race for the NHL. He has produced. He has quietly, very quietly, in the organization, produced for 2 years, and with his contract ending this year, it's incumbent upon the Laval Rocket players to pull together and help Chris Terry, help their teammate Chris Terry, one of their leaders on the team, to win the scoring race.
I agree with that 150%. That is a reason for a team to come together and have something, you know. And Chris Terry will be the first one to tell you, team comes first, individual goals are secondary. And good for him for being the team guy and a team leader that says that anytime anybody asks him about this scoring record this year. And Sylvain Lefebvre will say the same thing and has said it, that, you know, while he's proud of Chris, the team win has to come first. And so all of that's great, but it would be a win for the team if Chris was able to come away with this achievement this year. It would be something that they could collectively feel good about, that someone on their team did something noteworthy. So I completely agree with you. I really hope that Chris is able to pull some more points out of the bucket this weekend and hopefully clinch that overall points race. Going to take just a moment as we talk about a crazy home and home schedule that these teams have this weekend, where we just mentioned, you know, that after a late start game, two teams are going to get on two buses and they're going to drive through the night 5 hours to Toronto, and they're going to get up the next day and they're going to play hockey. And it's something that happens in so many leagues, so many nights a week, all over North America. And it's something that even us at the AHL Report do right along with them. There are many nights that, you know, on the weekends when we're traveling on the road, covering the team, that my car is driving right behind the Laval Rocket bus down Route 90 in upstate New York at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, through sometimes horrible conditions. And it does always go through your mind, like, okay, what are the weather conditions like to get where we're going? And just want to take a moment, Rick, and just provide our thoughts and condolences and remembrances for the tragedy that happened in with the Humboldt Broncos this past weekend. It's something that has rocked the hockey community worldwide. And admittedly, as I say, because we watch these guys get on a bus a couple of times a week and sometimes are driving right behind them and making that trip as well, you know, it strikes close to home. And it's every guy that plays in the NHL has been there, has been on the roadies, has been on the busies. And you know, we've heard a lot of accounts from players and coaches and staff and trainers about how that's where your best friendships are formed, those long bus rides and playing cards and watching movies and watching video and going over game plans and napping and those kinds of things. And to have all of that come to a screeching halt in such a tragic way, it's something that really makes you stop and think about what it is that these teams go through just to play the game that they love so much.
Yeah, this one hit hard. This one really left a really empty, numb kind of feeling. And when you just start thinking about the players, the coaches, the husbands, the brothers, the tentacles of this, the number of people that will be affected, the family members, the billet families, the friends at school, even the community members in such a small 6,000 population of citizens of Humboldt. This is tough. And as you say, you know, while we don't have, I don't know any one of them personally, we do know a great number of players who get on buses every single day. Mm-hmm. And not only the players, but the coaches and the scouts, and as you mentioned, the journalists that get in vehicles and crisscross this country and crisscross Canada and the United States to for the game of hockey. And you know, we're all connected by hockey. And when something like this happens, we're touched deeply by the tragedy. Hockey's not a game. Hockey is a game, but it's not just a game. It's part of our culture. It's part of our the lifeblood of small towns and a way of life. And I think of, you know, the thousands of miles, the thousands of hours that we've all put in, and some close calls along the way, and how life can be changed in an instant, So that's why I think, you know, it's really impacted so many people. And it's good to see the, you know, people doing what they can, feeling touched and doing what they can with the GoFundMe campaign, doing what they can to bring awareness with the, you know, wear a jersey campaign on, I think that's April 12th. Mm-hmm. The sticks out on your porch here. Here, boys, use one of mine. All of that is you know, it may be symbolic, but it's very meaningful, and it's a way of people, ordinary people, showing how this touches their lives. And again, it's going to be some really tough times in Humboldt, and it's going to be tough for a very long time. Their lives will never ever be the same. You should never ever have to bury a child. And it's this can't go out of our mind. We have to be thinking of these people, because there are tough times ahead for them, and they're going to need a lot of help and support.
Absolutely. You know, it's for me, except for the rare occasion that I make my way all the way up to Laval to cover a home game. 99% of the time that we see the Rocket is when we're on the road with them. And call me old fashioned, but every time I get done post game interviews with Sylvain and whatever players that we have interviewed that night, I always shake each of their hands. And whether we're all traveling to another city the next day, or we're all done for the weekend and they're headed back to Laval and I'm headed back to Pennsylvania, I always say to each one of them, you know, take care and have safe travels. And there are times that I think to myself, do I sound like old fashioned and silly every time I say that? And I found myself this past weekend thinking, no, I can't let myself feel silly for saying that every time, because as you say, life changes in an instant. And I have a feeling this Saturday when we leave Toronto and they head back to Laval, my see you later and have safe travels back to Laval is going to be a little firmer and a little, it's going to have a little extra something to it. Because you're right. No one should bury a child, and the families and the community will always feel the ripple effect of what has happened this past weekend. And, you know, all you can do is just pray for every team to get where they're going safely. So, you know, it's not something that it's certainly something we hope that doesn't happen again for a very, very, very long time, if ever at all. And our thoughts are with both the community in Humboldt, but just the hockey community in general. And it's amazing, Rick, to see as you talk about the initiatives that people are trying to do what they can, you know, whether the fundraising, for Humboldt, has been tremendous, and just ways of it's amazing how in times of tragedy like this and hardship, communities really come together and this hockey community is global. And it's amazing to see people from all across the globe come together and understand how important it is to just stop and pay respects to these young men. And those who survived as well, because they have a big struggle and a big a hard road ahead of them as well.
Yeah, indeed they do. And you know, they're going to need that community fabric to remain strong. But they can't do it alone. They're going to need some support. But I just you know, one of the stories that really touched me was when the mayor himself, the mayor of Humboldt, found out about the accident. And his first reaction was not to go to the town office. It wasn't to go to the police station. And you know, that I should say that for people that don't know, the game was to be held in Nipawin against the Nipawin Hawks. But the mayor went to the arena, what should have been an empty arena because there was no game being played there in Humboldt. But it's just when, you know, and I had the fortune, good fortune to live in Western Canada and get to know some Western Canadian folks for a portion of my life. And you know, the arena, as particularly in a small town, is just the gathering point. It's the place where people go in tough times. And when the mayor walked in, he saw a couple of dozen people sitting quietly in the stands, looking down at the ice. And it was just their place of refuge. It was their place to connect with other people. It was their place to, you know, share their grief and offer their support. And as time went on, people came in and you know, you can kind of fill in the blanks and know that somebody would have arrived with coffee and somebody would have arrived with trays of sandwiches and that that arena is the hub of a small town, and it shows how important hockey is to Canadians and to particularly you know, small town Canada, and we should really appreciate this game that we all are very fortunate enough to be connected to in some way every single day, it reminds me of you know how that I'm very grateful to do what I do.
Well said, well said. Of course, if any of you out there listening, you know, social media is a thanks to social media, there I can say plenty of negative things on most days about social media, but in times like this, social media is a bit of a blessing for people to come together in community and just express how they're feeling about things and find support from people who are feeling the same way. And if you have, you know, stories that you would like to share, or if anyone has a story related to this tragedy that they feel isn't getting enough attention, you know, feel free, of course, to tag us, forward them to us, and we're happy to share stories with our followers and readers as well. All right, so we're going to just move on quickly here. As is always the case, it seems practically every week, the AHL Player of the Week is yet again someone who the Laval Rocket faced last week. I don't know why this seems to happen all the time, but it's Harri Sateri, who is the goaltender for the Springfield Thunderbirds. He was the Player of the Week for the AHL this week. He turned aside 23 shots in Springfield's 5-1 victory over Laval on Friday night, in addition to having a shutout, I believe, 2 days before that. So Harri Sateri, your Player of the Week. More importantly, the American Hockey League did announce this week the award for the AHL's Outstanding Coach for the 2017-18 season, and it's voted on by fellow coaches and members of the media in all 30 of the league's cities. And probably not surprisingly and very deservedly, that award this year has gone to Pascal Vincent from the Manitoba Moose, who at Rick, we've talked plenty this season about how just what an amazing team Manitoba has put up this year. And you can see the reflection of that in the parent club as well, and how well the Winnipeg Jets are doing. And so very, very deservedly awarded to the head coach there in Manitoba, who happens to be a native of Laval, Quebec.
For sure. And congratulations to him and his team. But Pascal, you know, 2 wins in your last 10, get it together, bud. you dropped into second below the Wolves, in the Central. You know, put together a strong run, to finish out the season and to go into the playoffs, top on the Central.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of the playoffs, as we've mentioned, there is only 1 week left in the regular season. The regular season does end at the end of the day on Sunday. So playoff playoff jockeying is still happening. As we've said before, the North Division is pretty well set. Utica and Rochester are only 2 points apart, so there might third and fourth place in the North might jostle around a little bit. The Atlantic Division, as far as second, third, and fourth place, is still up for grabs. Right now, it's Penguins, Bruins, Checkers as far as second, third, and fourth place, but there's only a few points that separate each one of them from the other. So now the thing is that Charlotte is actually, are they done for the week? No, they aren't. They have two more. Their last home game was last weekend. They do play in Providence and Bridgeport. So they do have two more games to play. The other two have three games. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens there. But all eight teams in the Eastern Conference have clinched. Not the case in the Central and Pacific yet. Looks like the Rockford Ice Hogs should clinch as the fourth and last team to get in for the Central. And it looks like the San Diego Gulls should clinch for the Pacific Division as well. They're both respectively need one more point to do that. So Rick, things are starting to shape up for the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see in the Eastern Conference who the Toronto Marlies, first place in the North, and who the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, first place in the Atlantic, will be matched up against in the postseason. And I guess I should...
Following, as you mentioned, that this weekend we'll be in at RICO, bringing live coverage of the Laval Rockets, the Laval Rockets final game of the year. But the coverage doesn't stop there with
no.
The AHL report. We will be covering the AHL playoffs. And maybe you want to, maybe that's what you were going to start to say when I so rudely interrupted you.
No, you didn't interrupt me. I had finished my thought and then I started a new one. I was in fact going to say, this should be the perfect time for me to say, that we will be continuing our live game coverage. Once the regular season ends, we're going to switch gears. We'll be covering the AHL playoffs, as Rick said, in general. However, we are going to, we have committed with the Phantoms that we will be providing live game coverage of their series in the first round and further if they go further. So I'm especially anxious to see who, as it'll be interesting if for some reason Wilkes-Barre has a complete collapse and they end up in fourth place with the parent club, Flyers and Penguins, playing each other in the first round. It could get really interesting if the AHL clubs also faced each other in the first round. But we will still have, all the live, really fun rinkside coverage that you've come to know and love at the AHL report. And we're just going to give you, a closer look at player, different players around the league. And that's going to be a really actually exciting opportunity for readers and listeners and viewers at the AHL report. Is you're going to get to know some players from some other teams as we do post-game interviews and things of that nature throughout the playoffs, and gives you a chance to just kind of get to know some other players and some other teams around the league, because hey, in the summertime, who knows? You know, last year we would have never known that Matt Tarmina was going to end up leaving Syracuse and coming to Laval. So you never know what player that's on a different team today is going to be on the Laval Rocket in the fall. And so just ever expanding our coverage here at the AHL report. Since we're talking about playoffs, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're talking about playoffs.
Indeed.
This week, we have the top five isn't really a top five. I mean, it's kind of slotting into the top five segment, but the Stanley Cup playoffs begin tomorrow. And so I think it's time for us to put pen to paper and officially put down our predictions for the playoffs this year at the NHL level.
All right.
What do you guys think out there? We want your predictions as well. And we're going to keep track, folks. Don't worry. See, this is how we know that answers can't change, because we're going to reveal everything right here. And it's, you know, once it's recorded, it's there. We'll keep track.
Like your pick of Vegas as one of the top teams in the league earlier, that I thought was absolutely insane.
Hey, I'm a little disappointed in Vegas. They didn't respond. But I retweeted that episode. It was the second episode of From the Press Box, where we talked about our power rankings for the year. And yes, for my top five, I had Vegas at number five. I said, call it beginner's luck, or, you know, beginner's luck on the Vegas Strip. But I went back and I listened to it. I said, I don't love their roster. Which frankly, their roster ended up being better than it was to me on paper back in September or October. I said, admittedly, I don't love their roster, but for whatever reason, I think you're going to have to watch out for Vegas. I think they're going to do something. And yeah, they kind of have a little bit. So this gives us a chance to kind of put our opinions out there, Rick.
Good on you, because I think I probably the first time in my life I was sarcastic, and I said to you, was that the bottom
just
five
the
or the
that you said that you did you said are you sure this isn't who you think the bottom five teams are going to be? And I said, you joke now. I said, I think they're going to feel that they have something to prove, that they're not just a flash in the pan expansion team that has no talent. And then
give full credit to Gerard Gallant for really motivating this team and proving that, I mean, it's all four lines. Bringing them all together. But genius general managing moves, speaking of general managing as we were earlier, you know, to approach Columbus, and Columbus says, oh no, don't take these guys over here. And if you don't take these guys over here, we're going to give you a first round pick and a second round pick. And yeah, you can take this. Who do you want? William Karlsson? Yeah, you can have him.
You can have him.
How many 40 some odd goal? How many 43? Oh, 40,
I don't even,
what's he
I
at?
Lost count.
So
way more than
some,
anyone.
Yeah, and as Bergevin says, you know, there's just no players out there that can help teams.
No, there's not.
It's stunning, and. I don't know if we're starting there in our predictions, but I'm really interested in that series, the Kings Vegas series. That's going to be a good one, and maybe one of the hardest to predict.
I think so. Well, we're gonna because we don't have to go through necessarily explanations for why we're picking who we're picking. We're laying down picks for every round and all the way up to who's going to win
the cup.
Is
that what we're doing?
Yes, all right. That's what we're doing. So we can start with that series. So Golden Knights, LA King, who do you have?
Sorry, there's a bit of an explanation. I like the Kings' defense, their goaltending, versus the all four lines of Vegas. Whether I kind of want to see Vegas move on or what, I'm picking Vegas in seven. But it could go either way.
Alrighty. If you've predicted, you say Vegas in seven, I'm just giving, and that's good. I'm only going to give who's going to win the series, not what the record's going to be. You did extra credit.
So I am going to have a national day next week if I've done extra.
I wouldn't go that far. Wouldn't go that far. I have also selected the Golden Knights because what kind of prognosticator would I be from back in the fall if I didn't have them winning it? If they're going to make it to the playoffs, they've got to win at least one series. So I'm going with the Golden Knights over the LA Kings. And so while we're over in that area, Ducks versus Sharks.
Again, me.
Yeah.
This is another good one. This is going to be a nasty one.
I think
it's going to be physical and nasty. And I don't know if it's been decided if John Gibson was a bit injured and whether Ryan Miller's going to take. I don't know what's going to happen there, but I'm looking at Ducks in seven.
Ducks in seven. Did you look at my answers? Because I also have the Ducks over the Sharks in this one. Also have the Ducks. All right. So far we are 2-for-2. Let's move over to the Preds and Avalanche, who were the Avalanche excited when they clinched. Rightfully so. Go for it.
I have Nathan McKinnon, great season. He should be in the MVP conversation over some other unworthy, unmentioned candidates. But the Preds defense, goaltending, the Avs don't have Varlamov, so I'm picking Preds in five.
Okay, seriously, I think you cheated because I also have the Preds over the Avalanche.
But you don't have a number of games, so.
No, I don't. You're just trying to make it look. See, that's why you did what the record's going to be, because you're trying to make it look like you didn't cheat on and copy my answers. I saved this one for last on purpose. Winnipeg Jets versus Minnesota Wild. Your second team in there. Who's winning this one?
I have a soft spot for the Jets. Yeah, indeed I do. But listen, Jets, second in goals for, fifth in goals against. Hellebuck, let's see if, how he can do. But, I mean, 44 wins, he's got to do pretty well. The Jets just have way too many weapons. The Wild don't have suitors. So, Jets in five.
Well, call it a Western Conference sweep because I also have the Jets winning. The Jets are on a roll, and I would like to see them. I'd like to see them have some positive things happen. So I also think that the Jets are going to take it over the Wild. So for the Western Conference first round, Rick and I are in concurrence in all four series: Predators, Golden Knights, Ducks, and Jets. So let's move over to the Eastern Conference for the first round. Let's start with the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the New Jersey Devils. This is going to be an interesting series, I think.
Taylor Hall, another another worthy MVP candidate. Not like some unworthy candidate.
You just stop it.
But after Taylor Hall, I don't see what the Devils have, so I've got Lightning in five games.
Well, they do have a guy called Nico Hischier, and they do have a guy named Will Butcher. The Devils have been surprising this year, but I don't think they're going to I don't think they're going to surprise the Bolts. I think Tampa Bay wins this one. Kudos to the Devils for really kind of stepping it up this year and making the playoffs. That's a big improvement for the Devils, I think. And I think they're going to get dangerous down the road, but not this year. They don't make it past the first round for me this year. This next series is going to be the series that I'm going to love to hate watching, because the Bruins and the Leafs playing each other is just going to be like, could they all just lose? Is that possible? Like it's going to be like a train wreck where I don't want to look, but I have to, it's funny as we're sitting here, the Flyers just happened to tweet just now. a friendly reminder of the impactful season our captain has had. Hashtag Giroux for heart. Yeah.
Oh, God.
The Flyers just tweeted that just literally 1 minute ago.
Uh-huh.
Season stats. Second in the NHL scoring race, 102 points on the season, finished top 10 in six categories in the NHL. Six categories.
Was one of them beard growth or?
Anyway.
Listen.
Bruins and Leafs.
Bruins and Leafs. The two most hated rivals, or the two longest rivals, I guess, of the Montreal Canadiens. So, as you said, this is a tough one. And good for the Leafs for the way they've turned things around, the entire organization around. They're way ahead of schedule in doing that. And you know that I admire their whole front office that they put together. But the Bruins have just been playing too well, particularly down the stretch. So reluctantly, I'm picking Bruins in six.
This is getting ridiculous. But I also have selected the Bruins. The Bruins not only have had, I choke on the words as I say it, have had a stellar season. They have a lot of veterans on that team who have a lot of playoff experience. And I think the Leafs are going to fall short on this one. I think it's off the cuff. I think it's going to take seven games. I think the Leafs are going to put up a fight, if for no other reason than to make us all have to suffer through watching these two teams play each other seven times. But I have the Bruins as well. Okay, Blue Jackets, Capitals. Could also be a fun series to watch.
Well, an interesting.
And hey,
that,
Cannons.
Yeah. the interesting part for me is that Braden Holtby will not be starting for the Caps. It'll be Phil Grubauer. Tying it back to the Canadians and the interview today, Bergevin's interview with Mitch Melnick. Mitch said, Mark, Grubauer is starting the series for the Capitals. Bergevin said, yeah, he had a good season. Mitch said, yeah, that's why he's starting. Bergevin said, well, the players in front of him got the job done. Mitch said, the general manager also got the job done. Bergevin said, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a moment.
It was the best shade throwing on radio ever.
But as far as my predictions, I've got the cat. I know their track record as far as the playoffs, but I think they're too strong down the middle. And that they're going to take this in seven games, though. It's going to go to the full seven, but the Caps should take it.
Finally, stop looking at my answers. I have the Blue Jackets taking this. I can't stand the Capitals, and I'm tired of them winning things. Don't ask me why. It's a metropolitan division kind of thing. Or not a metropolitan bit, but it's just a Flyers Capitals thing. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I think the Blue Jackets are gonna be the upset in this one. So I have the Blue Jackets.
Hmm.
Before I move on to the last series in the Eastern Conference, which is a very important one, I should note that the Flyers also just tweeted a campaign that Couturier should be up for the Selke.
Yeah.
Sean Couturier for Selke.
Is Elliot for Vezina coming up next?
Oh, dear God, no. No, if there was an award for the franchise with the worst goaltending cumulatively over franchise history, except for Marty Baron, then it would go to the Flyers.
And sure. Your general manager, when he was in the NHL, what position did he play?
Oh, he was a goaltender.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He was dirty as anything, too. And that's why he is forever beloved in the hearts of every Philadelphia Flyers fan. So that brings us, yes, to the last. I have to say, you know, watching the NHL games on Saturday when it was not decided yet who was going to play the Flyers. The Flyers clinched their spot with a spectacular win Saturday afternoon. Lost my ever-loving mind. But it was very up in the air as to who they were going to play in the first round. And I was just, please not the Penguins, please not the Penguins. Anybody but the Penguins, please not the Penguins, please not. Okay, we're playing the Penguins. But you know what? In hindsight, bring it on. I think Bruins and Leafs are one thing. Pens Flyers is going to be nasty. These teams absolutely hate each other. Their fans hate each other. The Battle of Pennsylvania is on. And oh, man, what a way to start the playoffs. I am so stoked for this series. I think the Flyers are going to lose it. But I took the Penguins. Oh, I can't even get that
what?
Out. I did not take the Flyers to win this series. That is
what?
Proof. Anyone who ever needs proof of me not being a homer, please bookmark this episode at this time frame. Because the Penguins, you know why? Because the officials will throw it for the Penguins, because that's what they do every freaking time. And Sidney Crosby is going to have some dirty play, and he's going to take out, like, I don't know, half the Flyers team, because he's just going to slew foot everybody. And the refs will say, oh, Sidney, I think you cross-checked that guy in the head. We'll give them a penalty instead.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not bitter.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think fans around the league, if you're a fan of hockey, if you're not a fan of fighting, don't watch this series, because it's going to be ugly, and I'm going to love it. But I have the Pens taking this one. I'm sorry, Flyers. Please prove me wrong. See, that's my motto in life. Like, go in expecting the worst, and then the only thing that can happen other than my expectation being met is that I'll be pleasantly surprised. So it's a win either way.
Tell me this. Who's going to finish for the Flyers? Who's going to finish the series in goal? Is it going to be Elliott or is it going to be Mrazek?
Who's going to finish
not start,
the series?
But who's finish? Yeah.
Mrazek.
Hmm.
Elliott's going to get the I think Elliott will get the start to start the series because of how he played on Saturday in a huge clutch game. He played very well. So I think he'll I think they'll go with the hot hand. I think Hack will go with the hot hand. I don't think he'll be able to sustain it against the Penguins' firepower. And I think that'll pull Peter Mrazek into it. And then things will just go downhill from there.
Hmm.
So who you got?
I have the Pens in six games. And, I mean, Crosby, Malkin. Malkin, you know, we were talking about MVP, true and worthy MVP consideration. Have any other tweets from the Flyers?
I wish.
To interject with?
I wish.
Pens in six.
All right. Okay, so quickly then, let's head over to the second. So we have Rick and I both taking the Lightning over the Devils. Rick and I both taking the Bruins over the Leafs. Rick and I both taking the Pens over the Flyers. Rick taking the Caps. Me taking the Blue Jackets to finish out the Eastern Conference. So second round. This will be a series. If this ends up happening, this will be a series. The Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. Who do you have?
I wish that was the Stanley Cup, you know?
I know.
That series throughout the season has been unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable to watch. I'm taking the Preds. You know, my heart says Winnipeg, there's nothing like a whiteout. Yes, the Bell Center during the playoffs is amazing, but right up there is playoffs in Winnipeg. It'll be absolutely nuts. But I'm reluctantly taking the Preds.
I'm taking the Jets. I think if the Jets can get the momentum of that first round win, I think they take it to the Preds. I think it's going to be a long series. But I have the Jets. Also, I'm not a Nashville fan, so there's that. So some of it is a little bit that I would like to see the Jets win. But I think I like their coaching, and I think I should walk that back, because I do like Peter Laviolette as a coach. I liked him in Philadelphia, aside from goaltender issues. So it is two good coaches facing each other, but I think Winnipeg outcoaches Nashville.
Okay.
So that then takes us to, we both have Golden Knights against the Ducks.
And the Ducks will take that.
I'm sticking with the Knights.
Okay.
Go ahead. Call me crazy. Put it on record. I'm sticking with the Knights.
I'm not saying nothing. I'm not saying anything.
We both would have this second round as well, Lightning and Bruins.
I say Tampa. I fear the Bruins. They've been playing real well, and I just emotionally, I don't want to see the Bruins come out of this. But I'm picking Tampa.
I also took Tampa. I have a feeling I'm going to be wrong. I think it's more wishful thinking than anything, but I don't know. There's times that Tampa just can be really solid. Maybe the Bruins will be old and tired by then. I don't know. I also took Tampa here. So here's where we start to differ. You would have Pens Caps in the second round.
Pens Caps is serious as well. You know the whole Ovechkin Crosby thing. That would be a fun series.
Yeah.
And I see the Pens taking excuse me, Pens. Yeah, got me all joked up. The Pens taking that one.
And for me, it would be Pens versus Blue Jackets. And as much as it pains me to say it, that would be an obvious Penguins outcome. The Blue Jackets might be able to upset the Washington Capitals. It won't happen against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So then that brings us to conference finals. You would have the Preds. You would have the Preds against the Ducks.
Right.
Yes.
And so I have the Preds coming out of that.
Ugh. I don't like your conference. I don't like the route that your bracket's going here.
I still like the dream scenario is the Jets, and they have the horses to do it. That would be amazing, but since I predicted they would lose last round, I'm sticking with the Preds to be in the Stanley Cup final.
Really? Well, it means that I have the Knights and the Jets in the conference final.
Well,
wouldn't that be a series?
It would
and
be.
I hate to break it to you, that's when the Jets finally lose, because I'm still sticking with the Knights.
No, the Knights to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Go big or go home. I went big. I went big in week two of this podcast.
Yeah, apparently.
So I take the Knights over the Jets in the conference final. So for you, for the Eastern Conference final, you have the Lightning and the Pens. Actually, we both do. We both have the Lightning and the Pens.
Yeah, and I have the Lightning going.
As do I.
Yeah.
As do I, because there's no way in hell that I'm letting the Penguins get to... They are not winning the Stanley Cup again. They're just not. It's other people's turn now, Sydney. So that means your Stanley... your Stanley Cup final is the Penguins versus... No, I'm sorry. Is the Lightning versus the Preds.
Yeah. And the way this could fall apart is, you know, that there's always an upset in the first round, always, or at least it seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big upset along the way.
That's why I took the Blue Jackets over the Caps.
Of any of the teams, I see the Lightning as being primed for a bit of a. An upset, and if they get through, then I see them going all the way to the finals against the Preds, and that would hurt too, because if Preds are in the final and if they win the Stanley Cup, that's
I'm staying off of Habs
Montreal
Twitter for a
is
month
going
after
to
that.
Yeah,
burn. Those
yeah,
are going to burn the city
explode.
Down,
explode. Yeah.
So Lightning Preds, who do you have winning the Stanley Cup?
The Preds.
Really?
Yeah, that's not good. As we say, it's not good.
Well, it means that I have the Knights and the Lightning in the Stanley Cup final. And yes, people, I'm still going with Las Vegas. You heard it here first. Everybody called me crazy in September when I said, hey, you should watch out for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. And so you know what I'm going to do now? After they have set record after record after record after record after record after record all season long, I'm going to go with the bold hot take prediction that the Las Vegas Knights win the freaking Stanley Cup in their first inaugural season.
Now, speaking of Vegas, can you imagine in week two if you had put money down on the
Stop
Vegas?
It. I'm a gambler, and do you know how much I hate myself and my life every day that I did not do that? I may seriously put, you know, I don't know. I have like less than 24 hours to probably like find a bookie and be like, okay, I'm putting the Golden Knights to win the cup. And
this is where we run the disclaimer. We do not promote gambling.
We do not.
And...
Yes, we don't. We don't. But, you know, but what if I'm right? What if I was right? I was right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, aren't we just a ball of fun here at the AHL Report, where Rick Stevens has the Nashville Predators winning the cup and I have the Las Vegas Golden Knights winning the cup. But there you have it. Well, we're going to keep track of this. We're going to keep track.
Okay. All right.
And yeah, it should be interesting. This was good. I'm glad, you know, we finally, after we're pretty in line for the first round, except for that one series. And so then it things got interesting after that. So we'll see how this all works out. See how it works out. It's going to be fun. The playoffs start tomorrow. The Habs are not in it, which means, yes, it's lamentable for Habs fans, but at the same time, hey, stress-free playoffs. You could just enjoy good hockey. as for Rick, who's also a Winnipeg Jets fan, and me, a Philadelphia Flyers fan, we'll have eyes peeled on the playoffs starting tomorrow for sure. And of course, don't forget, we will be on the road for the Laval Rockets' final game of the season, taking place in Toronto on Saturday. That puck drop is at 4 p.m. Eastern, so it's not going to get in the way of any playoff things. So be sure to follow along at the AHL Report. And of course, when we're back next week, next Tuesday, we'll have some audio clips from the players after their final game of the season, and so on and so forth. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. And of course, be sure to tune in to all of our other podcasts here on Rocket Sports Radio. That's Habs Unfiltered. Have a listen. And as I mentioned before, Habs 360 on Saturday afternoon. It's been another good episode there, Rick. Thanks so much for joining me again.
Great podcast, bold predictions, and we'll see you at the RICO Coliseum.
Absolutely. We'll see you there. Until next Tuesday, thanks so much for listening to another edition of From the Press Box. I'm Amy Johnson. We'll see you right back here next week. Have a good week.